This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
For years, South Sudan struggled to gain their independence. Now it is struggling for survival. Rarely have such high hopes been squandered so quickly.
That's UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon talking about the situation in South Sudan. Details coming up.
Also, more than 150 people have been rescued and 42 are confirmed dead off Egypt's Mediterranean coast. And Nigeria's president is asking for UN help in negotiating the release of up to 170 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, dozens of migrants are feared dead after their boat capsized off of Egypt's Mediterranean coast. The overloaded fishing boat carrying mostly African migrants overturned on Wednesday, about 12 kilometers from the Egyptian city of Rosetta. More than 150 people have been rescued and 42 are confirmed dead. Authorities say they expect the death toll to rise as witnesses say around 100 people sought refuge in the boat's cold storage room as the vessel flipped over. Four suspected traffickers have been arrested following the tragedy. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story, and she spoke with me about the latest development in a string of disasters to hit those undertaking the perilous sea crossing to Europe.
Well, the boat was apparently carrying around 600 passengers and capsized around 12 nautical miles off the northern coast of Egypt near the town of Bourg Rashid, where the Nile River meets the Mediterranean. So far, rescue workers have saved the lives of more than 150 people, but there are fears for the hundreds who are still believed to be missing. Now, exhausted survivors from the capsized boat have told the BBC they were in the water for up to 8 hours, even though they had sent an SOS. And there were people there telling horrifying stories of survival and also talking about loved ones that they'd lost already that they knew had disappeared on that vessel. The boat is believed to have sunk because it was carrying far more people than it should have been, and that's what officials have told reporters.
I understand that some of those victims were one child, 10 women, and 31 young men who lost their lives during this capsizing.
We're still trying to find out more information. We know the boat was carrying Egyptians, Sudanese, Eritreans, and Somali migrants. Certainly there were some young Egyptians on board. One fellow called Mohammed told the BBC that he had said the Muslim prayer of death 10 to 15 times, preparing to die. And he said that he had lost his 14-year-old cousin, Mahmoud, on that vessel. So more stories are coming to light, but it certainly sounds quite terrifying and very upsetting, as many of these people came from poor villages in that part of Egypt, which doesn't have a lot of opportunities at the moment.
Also, authorities have arrested four suspected traffickers following this tragedy. Do you know the status of that?
We understand Egyptian authorities have arrested at least four people in connection with the deaths on this vessel. They're believed to be members of the crew and have been remanded in police custody for several days pending further investigation, but they face charges of human trafficking and manslaughter. The Egyptian authorities have also issued arrest warrants for five others wanted in connection with this tragedy. The Egyptian military is monitoring the situation. The governor of the local province, Mohammed Sultan, says that authorities still don't have a precise number of the victims. Indeed, they may never know just how many were on board this vessel, but they certainly believe between 250 and 400 may be missing.
Egypt is not the usual turning point for migrants to leave from. And I understand that the EU's border agency Frontex had warned that growing numbers of people would be leaving from Egypt. So are we going to see more and more people leaving from Egypt?
It's certainly certainly a worrying trend. If their focus is Europe, which of course it is, if that focus is Italy, which it generally is, the distance from Egypt to Italy is nearly twice as far. It's around 1,000 miles compared to the distance from Libya, where many of the vessels have been coming up until now. So this incident comes just as the head of the EU's border agency was warning that increasing numbers of Europe-bound migrants are using Egypt as a departure point. And not only Africans, but Egyptians who feel that there are very few opportunities for them in Egypt, looking to make that perilous journey to Europe in search of other opportunities.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Nigeria's president is asking for UN help in negotiating the release of up to 170 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants. Muhammadu Buhari made the request yesterday in New York in a meeting with UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Boko Haram abducted 276 girls from a school in Chibok in April 2014. Most remain missing. A faction of the group has offered to trade the girls for a large number of insurgents being held in Nigerian prisons.
Health is a top priority at the UN General Assembly meetings this week in New York. In between sessions, VOA's Adam Phillips met with Nigeria's health minister, Professor Isaac Adewuyele. He spoke about the UN meetings on health and the health situation in Nigeria.
What is particularly significant to us, we have the Stop TB meeting. We had meetings on reproductive health, and we also had a session on antimicrobial resistance, which is an important thing for us in Africa. And this evening, we try to look at the polio situation in the world to develop a renewed commitment to ending polio in 2017. We're looking forward to being certified polio-free next year. We thought we were very close, and we had these two cases first in July and another one in August. As the health minister, I was shattered.
I understand that it was actually the polio vaccination program that enabled the Ebola to be sort of contained more quickly.
It's not the polio vaccination program, but the architecture. And so when Ebola landed, we had people who were trained for surveillance, for tracking contacts, and we deployed them immediately. And that's why we were able to quickly contain Ebola in Lagos and Port Harcourt.
What is the relationship between getting health out, especially to the countryside, and other areas of concern, such as infrastructure, education, etc.? I mean, I'm sure you must work very closely with your other ministers.
Well, certainly. If you ask me, all these are interrelated. When you look at public health problems, other issues, maternal mortality, child mortality, ability to really visit care facilities, it is tied to education. It is tied to economic well-being and infrastructure, making sure that the economy is in good shape. When you invest in health, you contribute substantially to the economic development of the nation.
Is it a big part of your strategy to employ and train community health workers? I'm curious because, you know, they already have the trust of the people. Is that a sort of a key part of what you do?
We're looking at a nurse midwife-led primary care system. We do not have enough doctors to deploy to the rural areas. So we are going to use nurse midwives, we are going to use community health workers, village health workers, and we are going to really encourage people to be their primary care provider.
Tell me a little bit about mental health and how you view mental health in Nigeria. Here, the sort of the lines between mental health and physical health is becoming less distinct, and people, some of the stigma is leaving the idea of mental health. Well, is that part of your program?
I think this is one area where we have not done too well. We tend to see mental health as separate, but the new focus is to integrate mental health even to the community level. We need to really integrate. We need to let people know that it's one and the same. And when we invest in integrated programs, we'll save money, we'll reduce waste, and get better results.
Is there any kind of effort to integrate traditional medicine and healing with the national healthcare approach?
We do not have a clear-cut strategy to do that, but what we really want to do is to look into our traditional herbal preparations. We know that quite a number of our traditional medicines, our traditional leaves, herbs, herbal vital remedies for many of the ailments that we have. and we want to invest in this, link them to our research institutions where we can look into the active ingredients and produce them locally for the use of our people. But we also do not want to pretend that we know all that goes on within the traditional medical system. There's a lot of secrecy, there are no records, and so we do not have, as of now, any plan to celebrate the traditional system.
Any last words you want to say looking forward for the next year or even 10 years?
Well, I think it's important to reassure Nigerians and indeed Africans that we start implementing a program that will lead to the achievement of universal coverage in Africa.
That was Professor Isaac Adewale, Nigeria's Minister of Health. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips at the United Nations in New York.
Also, at the UN today, a high-level meeting was held on the violence and humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. UN Secretary General opened the session.
For years, South Sudan struggled to gain their independence. Now it is struggling for survival. Rarely have such high hopes been squandered so quickly. Time and again, the country's leaders have resorted to weapons and identity politics to resolve their differences. The children, women, and men of South Sudan are paying with their lives. Violent attacks have killed tens of thousands of people and forced some 2.6 million people to flee their homes. And this includes more than 1 million people who have sought refuge in neighboring countries. 6 million people are in need of aid, half of the population.
Mr. Ban says 1 million South Sudanese children are not able to attend school and nearly 5 million people face severe food shortages.
I visited and I saw for myself the fear and despair of some of the 200,000 men and women, boys and girls who are sheltering in UN protection sites. Hundreds of thousands of others are destitute, roaming the bush, or sheltering with extended family, friends, or strangers. Unbelievably, the situation has deteriorated since my visit in February. Violence has erupted again in many parts of the country, forcing people from their homes. Rape is being perpetrated on a mass scale. Over a two-week period in July, at least 217 cases of sexual violence were documented in Juba alone. 63 aid workers have been killed since the beginning of the crisis. Many others have been harassed, abused, detained, and arrested. In one heinous attack on the Terrain Hotel in July, a humanitarian worker was killed and others were raped, sexually assaulted, and beaten. I have launched a special investigation into the response by United Nations peacekeeping troops to the violence in July. But the full responsibility for these crimes lies with the perpetrators.
The UN Secretary General says humanitarian agencies continue to provide aid but face a severe funding shortfall of $700 million.
Humanitarians can only fulfill their mandate if parties to the conflict respect their independence and if there is no military solution to this conflict, only greater misery and suffering for the many at the hands of the few. I urge everyone in this room with the influence to use every opportunity to exert pressure on the parties and their leaders to reverse the slight need. The parties must uphold the peace agreement they signed more than a year ago and move toward rebuilding this fractured young nation. In the meantime, we cannot stand by as the people of South Sudan suffer.
That's UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon speaking at a high-level meeting today on South Sudan.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. More than 150 migrants have been rescued and 42 are confirmed dead off Egypt's Mediterranean coast. And Nigeria's president is asking for UN help in negotiating the release of up to 170 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram militants. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
This week, UN investigators said they found systematic violations of human rights in Burundi. They blamed state agents and their allies. Their report warned that the country risks a potentially genocidal situation. The response by the government is mixed. One official close to Burundi's president questions the accuracy of the report. However, the Minister for Human Rights agrees that there have been some violations, but says the UN findings are exaggerated. From Bujumbura, Moses Habayarimana reports.
The report of the United Nations Independent Investigation in Burundi says human rights violations are systematic and include sexual abuse, disappearances, wide-scale arbitrary detention, and torture. The study lists 17 forms of torture described by witnesses, including forcing victims to sit in acid. According to the French press agency, the report includes satellite images of mass graves and lists of those targeted by security forces. The United Nations findings are based on 227 interviews with victims and witnesses during two trips to the country in recent months by investigators. Willie Nyamitwe is President Pierre Nkurunziza's advisor.
The report itself biased, and the so-called experts who didn't take enough time to come in Burundi and make research, they have based their reports on anonymous testimonies. That means these reports cannot be credible. This is the reason why the government of Burundi has rejected the report and its content, because those experts did not come to Burundi to make a really work of investigation.
But the country's Minister of Human Rights and Social Affairs, Martin Nivyabandi, disagrees.
And for many Burundians is that we cannot deny the violation of human rights in Burundi, as it is in different countries. According to this report, the government don't deny the fact which is obvious. When we describe the situation on the ground during the period of April.
However, he says the report also includes disinformation. For example, he says many believe that the youth wing of the ruling party is behind some of the violence, but he says those individuals who are found guilty are held accountable. Civilians are anxious to an end to the crisis. Ayuba Bigirimana is a Burundian businessman.
And a lot of people were killed, but I should say that it's better for at least for the two parties to sit together and avoid the killings which occurred during the past month or which are still occurring here in Burundi. Yeah, the killings, we saw them. We saw the same, but I cannot tell you who exactly. I don't know as a person, I don't know as a citizen. I can't tell who killed, but we saw the killings. We witnessed it.
The political crisis in Burundi began in April last year when the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza announced that he would run for another term. Opponents say his move was unconstitutional. Continuing protests and violence have taken place since his announcement. He was later re-elected to another term. The international community and regional bodies have called on both the government and the opposition to commit to talks facilitated by former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa. However, the Burundian government is still reluctant to sit with some opposition leaders who it accuses of plotting a failed coup last year. The UN Independent Investigation on Burundi was established by Human Rights Council last December to investigate the situation with a view to preventing further deterioration of human rights situation. Since then, UN says 1,000 people have been killed since the crisis began over a year ago, including over 560 executions. 3,000 people have fled the country. The report urges greater international action to prevent genocide and the potential destabilization of the entire Great Lakes region.
From Bujumbura, Burundi, that was reporter Moses Havayarimana.
In Zimbabwe, five protesters were charged yesterday with intent to breach the peace and promote violence and bigotry. The defendants are members of the National Electoral Reform Agenda, a coalition of 18 opposition political parties. They were arrested during weekend demonstrations in Harare against President Robert Mugabe's economic policies. They also called for his resignation. Despite a court ruling against government bans on demonstrations, police have battled marchers with tear gas canisters on several occasions.
A coalition of human rights groups called on African Union leaders today to abandon consideration of plans to urge withdrawal of its members from the International Criminal Court. Last April, a committee convened within the AU and recommended withdrawal from the ICC unless it meets three conditions, one of which was immunity from prosecution for heads of state and other senior officials. The coalition, led by U.S.-based Human Rights Watch, said this call for immunity violates the African Union's Constitutive Act and goes against recent AU initiatives meant to stamp out corruption. Stella Ndorangu of the Kenya Section of International Commission of Jurists says AU efforts to undermine the only permanent criminal court for victims of atrocities are at odds with the AU's rejection of impunity and decision to make 2016 the AU's Year of Human Rights. The rights group says that blanket immunity for heads of states has never been a feature of international courts, and the decision to withdraw from the international court should be left up to each individual state. Many people in Africa, including some African leaders, have argued that the ICC is biased against Africa, as thus far it has focused on Africa. And its 10 active investigations, only one is outside Africa. Kenya's government is among several in Africa that has considered leaving the ICC. Representatives from the AU are set to meet with the UN Security Council tomorrow to discuss the potential exit.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. Oh. So join me, David Van Dee, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.